Hello and welcome to the Cracking Cybersecurity Podcast. I'm Anna, editor at TICE, and on this week's episode, we are featuring an interview with Chris Day, Chief Cybersecurity Officer at Sixtera, about the importance of studying geopolitical events in this cyber-sensitive world, IoT security, and how to build a cyber-resilient network. Remember, I'll be back at the end of the podcast with a cyber tip of the week. But for now, here is Chris, who begins by outlining the cyber trends we should know about.
What we're seeing right now, obviously ransomware is continuing to evolve.
What's the latest?
So the latest we're seeing some, you know, especially with the advent of GDPR here in Europe, we're seeing a lot of extortionware. And so that's where, you know, a piece of ransomware gets on a system. Not only does it encrypt, but before it's encrypting, it exfills data so that the adversary can threaten you with exposing your data, let alone you not getting your data back. So, because in a GDPR regime or any regime where breach disclosure is important, that extortion can potentially motivate you more than getting your data back in some sense. Or because ransomware has been around a little while, there are different backup and recovery mechanisms that it makes it harder for ransomware to completely shut a network down or shut a company down. And the adversaries know that. So again, that extortion becomes another lever they can use to try to get paid. So that's one area we see. We're also seeing some growth in and focus on, you know, Internet of Things is a very broad topic, right? So a lot of people, it means different things to different people. But what we are seeing is, for example, you go to any, across the river here, we see all these office towers. You go to any boardroom in any one of those offices and any one of those office towers, you'll see smart TVs on the wall, for example. We're seeing a lot of focus on how do I get into those TVs, because one, they're not very secure. Two, they have microphones and cameras built into them. They're great surveillance devices if I can get in.
Aircon units.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Air conditioner, refrigerators, internet-connected coffee makers that I don't know why your coffee maker needs to talk to the internet. But these are all systems that people don't even necessarily think about being computers. They're wearing a different skin, but they're connected, they're vulnerable. They collect interesting data around them. They might be able to interact with the physical world in interesting ways. And so that opens up a whole other vector of, one, cyber crime and maybe even cyber espionage. But also, if I can make all your coffee makers do something weird in the office, or I make all your TVs do a certain thing, I can actually sort of denial of service your office in the physical world. So when I have sensors and actuators to interact with the physical world, those devices become very interesting to me. And that's outside of industrial control systems and power grids and cars and all those other systems that, you know, again, your car today is really just a rolling computer, actually an array of rolling computers that weren't necessarily designed with security in mind. In fact, Black Hat 2 or 3 years ago, there was great demonstration of taking over a Jeep via the OnStar vector and, literally remote controlled a Jeep through a cyber attack. That's really fascinating. You can imagine, what if you could do that at scale to an entire city, right? You could shut a city down with gridlock, right? Every car stops. Or even worse, make half the cars stop and half the cars accelerate. Right? Lots of fender benders, whole city shut down. Imagine a city like London or Shanghai or Los Angeles completely shut down.
Is it going to happen soon?
Oh, I have no idea. I hope not.
Everybody talks about this imminent threat and the capabilities are real. Is it a bit like the nuclear bomb that, is this constant threat that won't actually happen, but it's just used in this sort of Cold War-esque situation?
And I think that's where paying attention to what's happening in the physical world is important, those geopolitical events. So, we see, for example, the Ukrainian power grid shut down. There was, two over the last couple of years attributed to Russian nation state. So, obviously, one, that capability is interesting, right? Could that happen here? Could that happen in the United States? In fact, the NCSC put out a warning sometime in the last 8 months, I believe, about that very threat. right, against the UK power systems. The United States Department of Homeland Security put out a similar warning right around that same time. So obviously there's worry that that is, one, an actual threat. Capability has been demonstrated. We know it's possible. Whether it's imminent or not, who knows? I mean, that would be, I think, dependent on what's going on in the world. It would be dependent on the adversary. Do they think it's worthwhile for them to do that to us or the UK, for example? Or do they want to use it on the target that they're interacting with themselves? So you don't know. NotPetya, for example, nobody really expected it, and it hit hard and fast, and it had a significant impact on global economy. I mean, there was a great article in Wired a few weeks ago about the impact NotPetya had on Maersk, the shipping company. And when you look at the amount of dollars that the opportunity cost alone, let alone the recovery cost, but just the opportunity cost for that company and other companies that were significantly impacted in similar ways, you know, one, there's obviously an economic consequence there, but you can imagine that if that, for example, shut down banking systems where people couldn't withdraw money for an extended period of time, or power grids were shut down for an extended period of time, that starts to undermine public confidence in the global economy or the global infrastructure. What does that do? So you get back to these influence operations. Maybe it isn't so much that they care about shutting down the grid. They just want to, you know, get the public concern. And then that maybe drives, okay, U.S., get out of Syria. We don't want, you know, this. So, you know, what we often do around these things is when we see upticks in conflict, we often will send warnings to our customers that we think might have an exposure to those areas and say, look, we have no specific intelligence about it, but in the past, when we've seen these levels of conflict escalate, there's been cyber activity. And sometimes cyber activity that isn't necessarily focused at you spills over. And so you become collateral damage in that conflict. NotPetya might be another good example of that. There's some thoughts that, you know, maybe what happened there is that got out of hand, that wasn't the intent. It was very focused on the Ukraine, but it got away from the Ukraine and end up all over the world, and maybe that wasn't the intention. And so we always tell people, when we have some indicators, you need to pay attention and, you know, think about your cyber hygiene, prioritize patching, build resilient networks. I mean, that's an area that we're pushing our customers towards, is rethinking architectures and whatnot.
What are the keys to building a resilient network?
You know, we need to start building resilient networks that, one, reduce your attack surfaces. Only expose systems to other systems that need to talk. There's no reason for workstations to talk to workstations in most corporate environments. You need to have the ability to recover when machines go down. You need to be able to have mitigation systems in place that allow you to mitigate rapidly. It shouldn't be, oh, wow, I've lost all these machines, and now I have to have people go around and unplug. Or, I mean, you read about, again, if you look at that Wired article, I mean, they literally were running around physically unplugging machines. It's not the way to do that. I mean, a cyber attack like that, they said in many cases those networks were down within 60 seconds of the initial infection. So no human can respond fast. And so we have to start thinking about what automated mitigation really looks like. But yet still have the ability for human judgment in that loop. So you may want rapid mitigation, but with the ability for a human to look at that and release false positives quickly, so that users are very negligibly impacted in those cases.
Often companies just have one person in charge of all the security. How do you know which risks and which threats to focus on? Because if you cover them all, you're gonna burn out.
Exactly. So for a lot of companies, the way to mitigate those issues, one, no single person should be able to do all things. And unfortunately, some organizations are just too small to have that. But where you can, you want those duties. You know, you want separation of duties. You want segregation. You want, you know, dual key. I mean, you don't necessarily want a single admin who can completely administer your network. You want to watch the watcher sort of thing. you know, depending on the nature of your enterprise, and you know, you can do things like insider threat monitoring. You can monitor email. You can monitor social media posts to look for anomalies and you know what your humans are doing. Again, look at what that human is doing on the network. Do you see a change in access and things like that? But again, building resiliency into the networks, having third parties helping monitor networks, that can be a way for even a smaller organization to limit that, where you know maybe you hire a managed security provider to help monitor your network in addition to your internal staff, and so you get a collaborative work going on, but it also becomes a system where there has to be a lot of collusion for extensive damage to happen.
How do you know which ones to leave behind?
Well, I mean, obviously, any corporation, any organization needs to be doing a risk-based analysis of what are the systems that are most important to the business. You know, and that'll vary business by business. You know, for example, a bank, for example, the financial data for their customers is really important. The ability to perform financial transactions, whatever those are. If they're a retail bank, the ability to distribute cash, the ability to pay bills. If you're an investment bank, the ability to move money around. Maybe your trading algorithms. Maybe it's your intellectual property around that, the code. You have to decide what's the most important thing to your business. What puts you out of business if you know your source code is stolen and posted to the internet? Does that put you out of business? If all of your customer data is stolen and posted to the internet, does that put you out of business? What impact does that have? Every attack is different, and so you have to sort of look at each one, but you can start to draw some conclusions and patterns. What we often see is usually it's a cyber hygiene problem to begin. That's the initial vector, or a phishing vector. It's one of the two. Once the intruder gets in, they start to do things like lateral movement through the environment, trying to get to the more sensitive data systems or trying to find those sensitive data systems. They might need to do a privilege escalation to get to more of an admin or a system level access to, again, to get to that sensitive repository to extract the data. And then they've got to get the data out. Often breaches have significant financial impact, but it doesn't just shut the business down. The Maersk NotPetya event, now, it didn't obviously kill Maersk, but it cost them a ton of money and had significant impact on their operation. If that had gone on much longer, that could have had a greater impact and potentially could have ended that business. If you read that article, the Wired article, you realize that the recovery was luck. And that's a frightening place to be. The reason they were able to recover was because they had one Active Directory controller that had not been impacted in Ghana because the network had been cut off, and by luck, the internet connection, or I'm sorry, the wide area connection into that location happened to be down at the time NotPetya was spreading around their network. So they happened to have one machine left over that hadn't been infected, and from that machine, they literally, physically turned the machine off, pulled the hard drives out, somebody flew it all the way back to headquarters, and then they use that to reconstitute their Active Directory environment. Without that piece of luck, they would have been down much longer. And depending on how long that would have gone on, it potentially could have ended their business. Just financially, they may have not recovered from all the claims against their business. So things like that, every company should be thinking about. Like, what kills my business? Or what costs me my job if I'm the CISO? And focus on those risks to the company.
Hope you found that useful, and a big thank you to Chris. And as promised, here is our cyber tip. Take case with out-of-office responses. Don't give too much information away. It may come back to bite you. That's all we have time for. Please do rate, review, and comment on our shows. We really appreciate it. You can also follow us at Tice and tweet us your questions. Until next time, bye for now.